So first of all, Oracle do a thing in the most dick way possible. What were the odds?
Yeah.
Could you believe it?
Reels.
Voltage. It's Thursday, the 7th of September, 2017, and I'm here, I'm Stuart Langridge, with me is Jeremy Garcia, and we have no John O'Bacon, right?
This is true.
And this is because we sat down and we had a conversation, and we decided that we don't actually like him very much, so we fired him, right? Fuck you, Jono. No, he's away, right? So
he is away for this very auspicious show, which I do believe, I'm not a mathematician, but is this not show 99?
It is show 99,
the one before
yes.
the century mark, so very exciting.
Be prepared, people. This is show 99, so the next one will be our 100th show, in which we are not going to do anything very special as far as I'm aware, but that, whatever.
I'm not aware of anything special, though.
So we've got a bunch of news. We're talking about exactly what's gone on over the last couple of weeks, and Jeremy said there's so much news, which is completely the truth, so we're going to pick a few.
It's been a newsy week.
It really has. And then our main featurette is...
I recently got the Essential PH1, and I figured we would have a little bit of a chat about that, especially considering we don't have to hear Jono compare it to his Pixel.
So. We were like, well, can we talk about that because Jono's not around? We think, well, yeah, because otherwise we're going to get bogged down in a lot of crap we don't care about, that only he cares about. So now we can avoid all that. So.
And now, Bad Voltage.
Time for the news, I think. You go first.
All right, so as I said, it's been a newsy week, and I had to pare it down to three just to get, you know, I understand we're not talking about a lot and there's only two of us, but that one of it turned out that we picked the same news article. But I'm going to start with a little bit of comedy, and that is, for those of you who weren't familiar with Juicero, which was the IoT internet-connected single piece of built aluminum juicer that it turns out was basically just your hand squishing a bag of already macerated stuff, ran out of money and is shutting down. Now, the news on this was particularly brutal, and I don't know which one of the headlines I prefer out of these three. It was, Juicero has run out of juice, pour one out for Juicero, or Juicero maker squeezed out of business after months of ridicule. So the media has taken a side here.
It is on the one hand, one might think it was a bit unfair that they became emblematic of everything that was wrong and terrible about the Valley and about VC funding and everything. On the other hand, they were held as emblematic because they were terrible and they were everything that was wrong about the Valley and VC funding and everything.
Oh, I mean, everything about the story is fantastic. The fact that who was it that actually figured out that you could just squeeze the bags? Was it AP?
Bloomsbury.
Bloomberg.
Bloomberg, rather, not Bloomsbury. Yeah,
and
Bloomberg.
Then, so the day after or 2 days after they announced that they were shutting down, the CEO went to Burning Man, which is fantastic. You know, you kind of mentioned the VC aspect of this. Just to give you a little taste of who invested in this, it's Alphabet's venture arm, which is Google Ventures, Kleiner Perkins, which is considered one of the VC firms, Artist Ventures, Kushner Strife Capital, like the list of their VC, their investors, massive.
And they had... what was it, $117 million, something, some ridiculous sum. And you think, there are people all over the place. I mean, everyone on this show, everyone listening to this show, probably knows a person in a startup somewhere, and they're crying out to find tiny little bits of cash and scratching together the odd thousand to keep things going while people sleep under their desks. And meanwhile, Juicero have all this money and just make a thing which is useless. It just drives me crazy. God.
$118.5 million in four rounds from 17 VC firms.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, right? I could put an orange in a bag and then stand on it, and I'll do it for quite a lot less than $118 million. It's ridiculous.
It is a juicy story, I will say.
In other news... interesting thing from Reddit. Now, one of the nice things about Reddit from a long time ago is that the code's open source. Right?
It always
has been.
Yeah.
Yeah, always has been. They released it from the beginning. And they announced this week that it's no longer going to be. Now,
they did.
Obviously, the Reddit crowd are absolutely up in arms about this, as we would have expected. But they make a point which I think is interesting. In the old days, when Reddit was built 10 years ago and people were building large-scale web services or whatever, you basically had a repository, maybe two repositories. Now, almost everyone who's running any kind of service, it's lots of little microservices altogether. So the idea of getting one single here is our source code thing is actually quite a bit harder to do. Now, I'm not particularly defending them, right? They came up with a bunch of bullshit excuses for, oh, we're not going to do this, and it's basically because of money. And they did have a problem, which I remember from when I was at Canonical, that it's hard to develop things open source and at the same time get a splash from the press when you release a new thing, because everyone knows the new thing is coming because they're watching the repository, right?
And that was one of the things they noted in their...
Yes, they made that point when they did new video features that it wasn't a big surprise when it got released. Or more accurately, they found themselves developing features internally in a private source tree, and then that diverges and diverges from the open source one until it becomes really hard to merge them back together. And on the one hand, you know, boo-hoo, cry me a fucking river, Reddit. You were supposed to be open source and now you aren't. But they do sort of have a point. And I think it's interesting how now that we've got this new model of you've got lots of different services and they're all spun up on different clouds and so on, it's not just a case of clone the repository and run it, NPM start, and then you done.
Right.
It is actually a really difficult job to spin up a service. If you want to spin up something like Reddit, it's really, really hard.
So if they did something like Docker Compose, they should be able to abstract most of that out, at least for simple installs. But
I
don't know that I buy that was the reason. I think part of it is they needed to be open source in the beginning because they had to make a point that, hey, even if we go away, here's our code and your data will be, someone else can spring up and take, you know, the archive of posts and you won't lose everything. We're now $100 million of VC later. I don't think they have that concern. So, you know, thanks for all the fishing.
Yeah.
See you later. They did make a point to say that they are going to now more heavily contribute to the open source projects that they use, which is obviously a good thing if they actually do that. The one interesting thing after this came out, I thought to myself, who actually uses Reddit? The code, not the site. And I really couldn't think of, there's a couple of popular.
What was the place where, when they started banning hateful people? Yeah, Vote, that was it. All the hateful people went there. Are they not banning a copy of the Reddit source?
So they do, and there was one other site that seems to be the Canonical, well, who's using it? And they point to them, but it's not very busy. Other than that, not a lot of people use it. Now, that's obviously not a reason that it shouldn't be open source. I was just interested, but that kind of made me think back when Slashcode was open, no one really used that either.
No, Launchpad is the same. There's a lot of discussion in the Reddit thread about how, this is so people can't copy Reddit now that you've got all our content. We hate you. We want to be able to spin up another Reddit and we can't, which no one did. In the same way that when Launchpad got released, no one spun up another Launchpad. The reason the fact that that code is open source is useful is because you can go and submit changes to it, right? No one's particularly expecting to spin up another Reddit. And only the hardest of hardcore free software people are demanding it on that basis. But having the code open means that you can ensure that they're not doing anything weird with your votes. Right? That if you think there's a problem, you can go and submit a pull request. I mean, stupid example, right? There's a guy who I've mentioned on the show before called Evan Miller, I think his name is. And he does a piece of Mac software called Wizard, which calculates a load of statistical stuff.
Okay.
He's very good at stats, apparently. I'm not a stats guy. But he sat down and derived a formula for how you should weight things like votes for Reddit. Right. Okay. So from first principles, from first mathematical principles, how would you build a formula where when someone votes now, how do you calculate which things should be at the top of the list? And there's a bunch of stuff around, you know, if you vote now, that should count quite a lot. But if you voted an hour ago, it counts a bit less. So there's decay and there's how much this stuff gets taken into account, so on and so forth. So he derived this from first principles and then went and looked at the Reddit formula afterwards and went, wow, you know what? They're basically the same. Cool. And that Reddit form has been there since the beginning. So the Reddit people must have done these calculations 10 years ago. when they originally set this stuff up. And that was really interesting. And stupid things like that. There's no way of calculating what algorithm Facebook use to put things at the top of your wall, for example. And half the reason for that is because if they open sourced, everyone would go, but those people get to be at the top of the wall because you think they're important because they paid more money or whatever. Right. They can't afford to open source the algorithm because people wouldn't like it. Reddit are not like that. And so there's a certain amount of suspicion going on that exactly the reason they want to close it is so they can do things like tweak the algorithm to the benefit of Reddit rather than benefit of Reddit's users.
A, you're going to under the assumption that they ran an unmodified version of the code, which I don't know why you would be under that assumption. B, part of it was always closed. So who knows what they did in that. So the spam algorithm was always closed. There were a couple very specific bits that were always closed. So who, I mean, if that's your mentality, who knows what those bits contained?
Yeah, this is true. I mean, and there is a reasonable case for saying that if you've got a priority algorithm, you need to keep some bits very close because otherwise, for every one person who looks at it and says, hey, what a very interesting statistical thing, 100 million people look at it with an attempt to game it.
Right.
This is why PageRank's always been closed, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the whole SEO industry, huge multi-billion dollar industry, is basically people attempting to game the Google PageRank algorithm, right?
Yes.
Or whatever the algorithm is now, which is not quite PageRank anymore. So there are a bunch of semi-reasonable reasons why you say, okay, you've taken it closed source and fine and whatever, and we didn't really need to be open source anyway. It's just, you know, another door closes. And there does seem to be a pretty high correlation between someone takes a bunch of funding and it goes closed source and stops caring about the community quite as much.
Yes. So it'll be interesting, too, I think, to see. So they haven't deleted the repos or anything. They just archived them. If someone really cares, the code will remain alive, right? I mean, that's the one interesting thing I think about open source is open source projects, by definition, almost cannot die. They can go dormant if no one really cares. But if one person cares, it will care. So I noticed someone already started Raddit, which I don't like the name, but fine, as one of the forks. But it'll be interesting to see if someone does now run a site on the forked code and maintains it, or if, you know, what
maintains it is the thing, I think. Historically, what you get is a bunch of noise about this and people saying, oh, this is terrible and we must fork it. And then a fork appears and a new site appears or whatever. And then a month later, nobody's using it. I have, much as I hate them and everything they stand for, the Devuan people, pissed and moaned an extreme amount about systemd being in Debian. And so they forked it, and they have actually kept with it, right? So they get a bonus point for...
longer than I would have anticipated, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
And I don't follow it super closely, but...
I would have assumed that it was a bunch of noise, and then a month later it would be dead and people whining on mailing lists. But no, they've actually built a thing. Well, I mean, I have no intention of using it, and I think it's stupid, but... fair play to them for doing it. It will be interesting, as you say, to see whether this happens with Reddit.
Yes. So tangential, now I'm just curious because that you bring it up. What was your opinion on Canonical or Ubuntu switching from Upstart to systemd when they did?
It was the right thing to do, to be honest with you. Oh. I didn't like the tone of some of the arguments, and mainly because there was a lot from the systemd side of Upstart is utterly worthless and everything we have done is better in every possible way, and therefore anyone standing up against that must by definition be wrong and a heathen, which I didn't like. But they were correct. There was a technical assessment, and I agreed with that technical assessment. You know, more accurately, I'm happy to cede that technical assessment to people who know better than I do about it. I don't actually fucking care about the Unix system, right? Whatevs. As long as it starts things. I was a bit annoyed because I had time, mental space invested in Upstart.
Sure.
I mean, I know how to have things run out of Upstart. I have a bunch of little Upstart jobs on my machine because I'm still running 1604, right?
Okay.
So I have a bunch of little Upstart jobs on my machine which run things, and I don't know how to do that with systemd. And it seems to be a bit weird and confusing about how to do user jobs with systemd and so on and so forth. But it was the right thing to do. And with the weight of everyone behind it, there is an enormous amount of value, in my opinion, in doing the same thing that everyone else is doing, unless you have a really big reason not to. If you're differentiating, if you're building Unity, for example, then that's your differentiator. No one differentiates themselves on the init system apart from Devuan. So, you know, whatever. This is the, you know, do your core competency and outsource the rest thing, right?
Well, there's a little lesson learned from a previous Canonical employee. So, moving on to the next story that I had is that it appears that Oracle has laid off on the order of 98%-ish of the Solaris staff in a, let's go with, fairly dickish manner. On top of it. It's not bad enough that they did it, but they kind of did this robocall, so you've been, like, in a very non-personal way, riffed by a answering machine, basically.
So, first of all, Oracle... do a thing in the most dick way possible. What were the odds?
Yeah.
Could you believe it?
Reels.
It really does, right? I'm sure everyone running Jenkins feels the same way. Goodbye, Hudson. So how little we knew thee.
Exactly. Yeah.
But more importantly, I think this is now officially the actual death of Sun, right? There's now nothing Sun left, is there?
Java.
Oh, true. Okay, I mean, now I'll give you
the thing about
Java.
Sun that I think. So I worked at a telecom for a very long time, so I have more Solaris experience maybe than I would like to admit. As painful it was, and I was at the time on
To SolarisQuestions.com. Ask your questions.
And BSD questions it is also there.
Solaris questions is real. I was taking the mic.
It just redirects to the LQ Solaris.
Oh right.
But I was the lone Linux guy on a team of old school Solaris administrators, and it was a interesting and deeply painful experience.
Oh, really?
But so the thing is, as Solaris matured, there really was a lot of cool technology in Solaris, from zones to ZFS to just quite a few different things that they did differently than Linux. Dtrace is another great example. They did differently than Linux, and the engineering side of it was really, really good. The user interface side of it was, I would say, actively user hostile for reasons that I don't completely understand. But the day-to-day using Solaris was painful. But the actual technology behind it was really, really, really well engineered.
Ah, now that I can believe. I never used any Big Iron Unix in any serious way. When I was at university, the machines were like HP UX workstations and so on. But typing LS on one of these things is the same as everything else. All I remember from that is using Turbo C rather than T10X C or whatever TCSH is. But that was it. I never did anything even remotely serious with any of these devices. So I didn't know anything about it. But now that's interesting. I mean, Oracle basically bought Java. Well, I have heard it said, and I find this convincing, that Oracle basically bought Java with the intention of suing Google into the ground and getting billions of dollars for it. And that utterly failed.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard many things about the acquisition. Part of it, I think, was MySQL annoyance on their side. So you can't buy Postgres, right? So that was the one open source database they could buy and do with what they wished. And I think that probably brought some people there great joy. And Java obviously was the other one that I think, you know, it almost at this point would have behooved Google to buy Sun just to avoid the Java lawsuit. But obviously hindsight's 20/20 on that one.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, this is one of the things there is that, and I don't know how the world would have played out if we'd done this, but at the time when Solaris were inventing all this cool technology, all the zone stuff and Dtrace and ZFS and so on and so forth, and people said, please put them under a real open source license so we can use them in Linux. It's like, no, we're going to use the cuddle instead. Here it is. Right. And they said, well, we'll never be able to use it. Now those things are kind of gone away, right? We're never going to get to use them now.
Well, I mean, there's OpenZFS now that is, I believe,
And there's ZFS in Ubuntu, but I don't... There seems to be some kind of weird licensing confusion around it, which I don't understand.
Yeah.
But it would be nice if those technologies could have lived on beyond the death of the company that spawned them. Now, Oracle would say, absolutely, they are living on. No problem with that at all.
So I think Illuminos would argue that they very much... I think Brian Cantrell, who was behind many of them, would argue that they're very much living on. You know, Joyan still uses SmartOS, and there's Open Indiana if you want desktop Solaris, which you don't want, believe me.
I believe OS X has got Dtrace.
Right, so I think a lot of the technologies are very much living on. I think it's... a small amount of companies use them, but those companies that do use them to a large degree.
Well, that's fair commentary. Yeah. Okay. No, fair play. It just, you know, it just seems a bit sad that
it is, cause
at one point, Sun with a grand hope for everything.
Exactly.
And
they were founded with such, you know, young, bright eyes. And for this to be the ending is, I think, sad. Just as a technologist is sad, regardless of what you think of what they did. You know, if they would have abandoned Spark earlier and been willing to go more open earlier, we'd probably be having a much different conversation, but...
Yeah, well, you know, so there you go. Next time you're in the pub, have a beer and raise it aloft to Sun. You were good at one point, thanks very much, and now you're gone.
So as I mentioned earlier, I recently acquired, through some difficulty, a phone from Essential, the PH1. So I originally was going to do a full review for this show, but due to the fact that Essential botched the release of this phone as bad as I've seen the company botch anything in a very long time, I just got it a few days ago, so I'm going to give my initial first impressions. We'll chat about that, and then hopefully, if there's interest, I'll do a full review once I've had it for a little while. So let's start with that launch. I don't understand how a company could burn so much goodwill so quickly without actively trying to do so. So they kept saying it was going to be early. Originally, it was going to be out in, I believe, May, and then it was June, then it was July. But when August came, they said it is shipping on this date. They took your money, they charged you, and then didn't ship you a phone. And if you emailed them asking, and I did not email them, but enough people did that they just didn't answer. And 24 hours went by, 48 hours went by, 72 hours went by. And then they said, yeah, they shipped, but didn't give you a shipping number, which means they did not ship. And then they finally did ship about, I would say, a week after they charged my card. I got a tracking number, and now I have the phone. But in the interim, the way they handled it was so poor that so many people were annoyed that you almost wanted to dislike the phone when you opened it, I think. And then you open it.
Okay. Yeah, well, exactly.
You were going to comment on that one.
Well, there are a couple of products I can think of which have done a similar thing. One of them, from your point of view, how does this compare to the glorious Moto Sport Watch in terms of customer service?
So that was a different thing, right? That wasn't mass launch. That was a company...
It was. I'm just curious as to how annoyed you are by comparison.
And if you don't know what Stuart is talking about, search through the Bad Voltage archives. I wish I knew the show off the top of my head. I do not. Where I had a Motorola Sport watch, a running watch that I really, really, really liked, and it broke, and it is to this day the worst customer service experience I've ever had, to the point that I actually graphed it out and charted it and had made enough noise that the office of the CEO ended up calling me and shipping me a watch, and by that I mean they accidentally shipped me a phone. So go listen to that story because it is amusing. Although they finally did replace the watch, and I still to this day use it every time that I run. So still a good watch. So anyways, yeah, I think it's different. It's just... The one thing that I thought a company founded by a guy like Andy Rubin would know is that when you're doing a new project, especially an ambitious one, you're going to run into issues. No matter how good your intentions, no matter how good your planning, issues arise. Being transparent about those issues means people typically give you slack. You're going to get a couple people that maybe don't, but as a community, and especially when the community wants to believe in what you're doing, if you're open and honest and say, you know what, that we had tooling problems at the end, or they still haven't said what the problems were, but whatever the problem was, be honest about it, be open about it. We really apologize. It's going to be delayed another 72 hours. We apologize. And I think that's all it would have taken. But being completely silent about it and then just charging people's cards and not shipping something will raise the ear of almost everyone. So
yeah,
I even understand the mentality.
We should maybe, there may be some people listening to this who don't know what Essential is. So a brief summary here, and Jeremy's going to know more about this than I do, I think. But Andy Rubin, who is the guy who originally invented Android, right? He set up a company called Essential and said, we're going to release a phone and it's going to be amazing. And they had lots of good marketing material, and people were very excited about this new phone. It was going to have kind of clip-on cameras, and it was going to have edge-to-edge displays. It was going to be a really fantastic platform based on Android. And kind of the vibe they were pushing was, you know how Google pushed the Pixel and the Nexus before that as being really great, up-to-date Android devices. This was the kind of vibe they were going for with Essential. Very high-end, premium device.
And they've made noise about a couple of very specific things. One is that it was going to be very well designed, that it was going to be very close to stock. And they made a big thing about privacy, right? One of their taglines is, devices are your personal property. You shouldn't have anything on them that you don't want. So they, I think Andy was probably a little bit annoyed with the direction that Android's taken or where it is now. And that's part of the genesis of the company, right? And they don't. One of their other things is they don't want it to be outdated every year. Devices should evolve with you, hence the two magnetic pins on there. So the first, this is they're doing a modular thing, kind of like what was the Moto Z, I believe, also did this.
Yeah.
So right now there's only one accessory that still isn't shipped. At least I haven't gotten mine. That's a 360-degree camera that clips onto the pins, but eventually they want to have a whole bunch of stuff. And another one of their taglines, and one that I really liked, is simple is always better. And that's kind of how I think about things. And like I said, it's kind of something you wanted to dislike when you opened it just because you were so annoyed. And then you opened it. And I will say this is, I've owned a lot of smartphones. And aside from the ones that I've owned, I touched all of the smartphones. This is the first device I've picked up in a long time where you look at it and you're just, wow. It is, this is a phone for you because unlike a lot of people that have Android phones, Stuart really cares about aesthetics and about the look and about the design. And this is a well, pictures don't do it justice, to be honest. It's a very well-designed device. The screen really is edge to edge. There's a tiny bezel on the bottom. But other than that, you pick it up and it feels like no other phone. I mean, the thing weighs a ton for how small it is. And the screen is bigger than my Pixel 6P screen, and the phone is way smaller. So it's actually a phone that I can hold in one hand and use no problem, which is, I think, a bigger deal than most manufacturers realize. It's from a hardware perspective, I don't know that I've held a better phone. Why it's not waterproof, I don't fully understand. Some of the downsides to it, I think the software was really, really rushed. There's a weird lag to it for how high the specs are that should not be there that I think the next update will hopefully fix. They've already had a lot of people complained about the camera, saying it wasn't very good. It turns out if you download the Google APK, their camera actually, hardware-wise, is fine. I think the software was just a little bit rushed. They use the one black and white, the one monochrome, one color camera, and it fuses the two images.
Yeah.
So I think they have a little bit of work to do on the software side. But honestly, on the hardware side, it's a marvel of engineering, I think.
I don't like saying this because it's absolutely the wrong thing. And anyone who is making a phone who's listening to this, you are not allowed to use this as an excuse, but you only get one shot at getting the hardware right. You can fix software stuff after release. You should not do this.
Right.
And if I catch any of you going, it's fine, we can fix it after release, then you should go and work for the Sony PlayStation team instead and then go to hell when you die because it's a horrible way to think. But you can at least fix these things. You can go, oh no, the camera's no good, push out new software to it, and that fixes that problem. The hardware, I mean, Jeremy, makes the point that I really care about the aesthetics of a device. I don't want some crappy plasticky phone, and this is why I was excited by Essential. Yep. And the screen is edge-to-edge to the point where the camera, which is at the top, is actually in a little cut-out bit of the screen.
It is.
Right? It's not like, you know, you go, oh, the screen is edge-to-edge, but then you've got a camera at the top, and then a whole bar across the top of the phone where the camera just sits in the middle of it. There's a little cut-out, a little oval cut-out at the top of the screen, and the camera sits in there. So basically, all the apps, the home screen, whatever, needs a whole bunch of new APIs in order to deal with the fact that the screen isn't actually rectangular. There's a cutout at the top of it. And the fact they're prepared to do that, they're prepared to make this kind of move in order to deliver something with a genuinely edge-to-edge screen, I think is great. That's fabulous.
And I'll say the lack of a lot of newer phones, flagship phones, let's say, have an AMOLED phone, or at least an OLED, if not AMOLED. This doesn't. Yeah. It's a traditional LED. I don't notice. I think it looks really, really nice, the actual screen. To my understanding, it's not AMOLED because when they started designing this phone 18 months ago, there was no AMOLED provider that could do the camera cutout. So that was the reasoning
that
behind
it. That
could
be right. One of the things I like about my OnePlus X is that when you get a notification and the screen is off, it can light it up in black and white mode and use way less power, which is nice. But so I'm not sure if that's AMOLED or some other.
I think Oreo brings some component of that adaptive screen to all Android phones.
Yeah. Does it?
I believe so. Which brings us to one of the other big selling points of this is because of it's nearly stock Android, there's a couple of very minor tweaks. They claim that updates will be the fastest non-Google. So basically, it should be a Pixel gets something, and then very shortly after, this gets something, and then 3 months later, you know, Samsung phones get it. Is what they sold.
If you're lucky, yeah.
I'm curious. So it already, before I even got mine, it got the August 5th security update. So that loaded before, right when you turned the phone on, the first thing it did was update itself.
That's encouraging. They have explicitly said, yes, it's going to be unmodified, and they promised 2 years of Android updates, which should not be a selling point. 2 years is the minimum requirement.
I would have liked
The fact that puts them streets ahead of all their competition is a rubbish thing about the competition, not a great thing about Essential, but they are nonetheless doing it.
So they did 2 years of full updates, 3 years of security updates. I would have liked to see 3 and 4, which gets you a little bit closer to the iPhone experience.
Yes.
I think 4 years is probably on the edge of when a phone's going to be useful anyways for a lot of other reasons. Batteries go to crap usually around 3 years in my experience.
So you replace the battery, right? Oh, no, wait, you're not allowed anymore.
So there's no way you could do a replaceable battery in a phone like this, I don't think.
No. But then again, I like the fact that it's modular, apart from, you know, things that I want to modular it. The battery. But yeah, so they've got this idea. They've got two, essentially a proprietary contact port, right, on the top. Yes. So you can clip things onto it. As far as I'm aware, they've certainly talked about this 360-degree camera, which you've bought, yes?
So if you bought it when you bought the phone, it was $49. It's usually going to be $199.
Geez, so, even if it goes in a drawer, whatever.
So at $199, I would not have bought it, for sure. But at $49, I figured, I'll check this thing out. The worst that happens, I figure I'll resell it for more than $49 if I hate it. Yeah. And if I like it, then cool.
Historically, people who make a big noise about loads of accessories tend to bring out no accessories. One of the few companies who did this right was Nokia. This is Stuart goes on about the N9 again. But one of the reasons that I liked the N9 when it came out is because Nokia were doing it, proper company, you could do things like go and buy an external battery, but in the same squircle shape that the icons were, and in the same colours as your N9 and so on. And that's not a clip-on accessory, it's just an accessory.
Right.
But a lot of the smaller manufacturers, which these days is basically everyone apart from Samsung, can't do that because they can't afford it. But Nokia could back then, they can't now.
Right.
So, and it'd be interesting to see whether Essential can actually manage that sort of thing. I mean, just stupid things like, can you buy a nice case for it, if you like cases, which I don't, but can you buy a nice case for it with the Essential logo on it that matches the color scheme?
Right.
That sort of thing.
I don't like cases either. I don't think there's any cases. I would not want to put a case on a phone like this. It's just, I don't know why you buy a nice looking phone and then put a case on it. I
agree.
Another thing is, I wish they would have included the insurance like HTC does. That HTC still is the only company that does that, I genuinely don't understand.
Well, I don't know about this. What's that?
So every HTC flagship comes with something called Uh-Oh, where you can basically destroy it once on accident and they will overnight you another phone for free.
Really?
Yeah. I did it with my M8, HTC One M8, and my M9, I think it was. And it was,
really?
you open a ticket and 18 hours later, you have a new phone, both times.
Wow.
Yeah. So I did that with my Nexus, but with Nexus, it's $100. With Essential has the same thing, it's $100. But at a $700 phone, I think it should be included.
Yeah, they should chuck that in. You would think. I mean, my OnePlus, I got it repaired, which was brilliant. It wasn't overnight, but it was 4 days. But that was basically a hardware fault. It stopped charging. I didn't drop it down the stairs or anything. So. Right.
Another impressive thing with Essential is they basically have like 100 employees. So it's a very small company. That they can do this with so few employees is interesting, I think. I mean, it does have some faults. The one thing that I'm not sure, and I guess I'm kind of funny, I want simple things out of my phone, and no manufacturer provides them. I want to have the best coverage out of any. I want everyone else to be struggling to get a signal and me to have one. Or everyone to have a good phone that gets a signal. But there's too many places where I don't get a signal with this that I got one with my 6P. I don't know if that's software or just bad antennas.
I like the fact that you don't want just a good signal everywhere. You want a good signal everyone else not to have a good signal so you can mock them for it.
If I'm going to have the Essential, which no one has, then yes. But I don't know why that's not a differentiator. I think it should be. Battery life, this might be the first phone that battery life is to my expectations. And my expectations are that I could leave my house on a Friday, do whatever I want for the weekend, come home on a Sunday, and still have a charge.
We'll talk about that in 2 or 3 months. Every phone's got stellar battery life for the first month.
Exactly. Just utterly doesn't count. I'm curious to see how this battery degrades.
Wait till you've left it plugged in overnight, every night, for 2 months, like everyone does, and then see whether it's any good.
I am curious. So that's why I didn't want to comment on it too much, but out of the box, the best battery life I've had yet. Like I said, the camera I think is fine. People are really, really on the camera because the Pixel camera is so good. And evidently, everyone all of a sudden is either Annie Leibovitz or Ansel Adams, which I did not know. But everyone's a critic with the camera. The pictures look fine to me. And like I said, I think another software update, it'll be, if not at the Pixel's level, very, very close. And if you have the second best camera, that to me is not a big point of contention. I don't think it's not. A terrible.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I mean, this came up with my daughter who has an iPhone 6. And if we're somewhere, we're out for dinner, whatever, and then taking pictures of your dinner like you have to these days, she won't let me take pictures on my phone. She has to do it on hers because apparently mine's got a rubbish camera. And I'm like, it hasn't really. I can't actually tell the difference between them, you big whiner, but that's what she thinks, and so, okay. And if you look at them, yeah, okay, fine, the iPhone 6's camera is better. And part of the issue when you are building a flagship Android phone, you're trying to build something which is really high quality, premium feel to it, is your competition is not particularly other Android phones, it's the iPhone. Yeah. Which means if everyone can point and go, camera's not as good, then you just lose, right? You've got to be better than an iPhone, because if someone thinks of a premium phone, that's what they think of.
Well, the phone market is definitely an interesting place. I think they think of the Samsung, whatever the current model may be at the time, the iPhone, whatever the current model might be at the time, and then they're vaguely aware that some other manufacturers may or may not make phones, which I think is an interesting. It's like between the two of Android or Apple and Samsung, they do not sell the majority of phones by a long shot. They make all of the money from a profit perspective. All of it.
Yeah.
It's like mid 90% of the profits go to those two companies, which is an interesting way for the market to shake out. But that's another thing that people don't like, that Essential is doing something different. You're clearly not going to out Apple today in 2017.
Nah.
Maybe someday you will. 2017 is not that year. And Samsung is a giant company with trillions of dollars in effect with how big they are. I mean, they make everything from spaceships to, you know, microprocessors. Yeah. They make everything.
They're
so
nuts.
You're not going to outspend Samsung in any single area. So you got to do something different. And will they succeed? Who knows? That's my crystal ball is, as they say, in the shop. But I like that they're doing something different and you know, taking a genuine swing at attempting to reshape the market a little bit.
Yeah. Which color did you get?
So that's one thing that I don't like about it. They have a whole bunch of colors, theoretically, someday. If you wanted to right away, the black was the way to go. And it's not the It's not the matte black or the matte gray. It's the shiny black that attracts. I wish I could. Like, this won't do it justice. By the way, you see that? That's the back of the phone, not the front.
I am looking at the phone here on the video, and I can see myself reflected in it over video.
You
it's
almost
like a
can't
mirror.
Tell the difference between the front and the back.
You can't tell the difference. I mean, right. I really like that. I wrote a thing years ago, blog post, saying what I want is a phone which is basically an undifferentiated block of black glass.
This is,
and then when you pick it up, it wakes up. And so the Essential might be it. That would be great. I'd like that quite a lot.
But it's a fingerprint magnet. But although I don't know how, so it's ceramic, this one. I don't know how it's so shiny and not slippery, but it's not.
Ah, that's an important point, because my OnePlus is shiny black because it's ceramic. And it's super slippery. I had the case on it when I had the stupid jelly case on it for two reasons. The first was that I didn't want to drop it. And the second one is that if you put it on any surface, any sort of vaguely smooth surface or a fabric surface, something like that, and that surface isn't dead bang on level, it will slide towards the downhill bit of the surface.
So,
and I've seen it fall on the floor half a dozen times just by being on the arm of a chair or something. It's nuts.
So some of the reviews said that. I've not been my experience, and I've kind of have put it wherever. I've not certainly not been more conscientious of where I put it than any other phone I've owned, and I've not had it slide around. One of the things in reading the reviews is, I think, and I don't mean the professional reviews, I mean the reviews on Reddit and XDA and that kind of stuff from people. I think people are so pissed off that they're judging it much harsher than they would have.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is a dangerous thing when you botch a launch like that. I think little minor things that maybe people would have gave a pass to are turning into these huge deals.
Yeah.
At least, or I'm not experiencing them.
Although that's absolutely the way.
The one other thing that I, just from an industrial design perspective, on the bottom is a sim slot. As with every hole, as with every sim slot, little hole, give you a tool. The microphone hole is identical to the sim hole and right next to it.
No,
yes.
What?
I don't understand what they were thinking. Like, that was stupid.
When the very first time you pick up a phone, you poke the back off of an earring into the hole, or the tool, if you've got the tool, whatever, right. But you just use an earring, right? You poke that into the microphone, which presumably breaks the microphone, and then you ring them up and go, fix my phone.
So I learned this the hard way and did that, because it's actually easier to access the microphone one than the SIM one. I must not have pushed the tool in far enough to break the mic, because the mic does work, but... I can imagine if you didn't use the tool and you used an earring or something that was longer, you would absolutely wreck the microphone, yes.
That's stupid.
Unbelievably,
oh my God.
Yes.
Who did that? So how are you finding the fact that it doesn't have a headphone jack?
I really genuinely don't care. I don't understand. So Pixel,
you were wireless earphones already, were you?
It did ship with one of these.
Ah, so you've got an adapter.
I do have one set of really nice wired headphones, but I also have one set of really nice Bluetooth headphones, so I will just use the Bluetooth headphones. But my running headphones were like $8, were already Bluetooth. All my other stuff's already Bluetooth, so I don't see it as a big deal. It's weird that they went with no headphone jack and didn't make it waterproof, but I don't miss the headphone jack.
No, well,
I also don't use Square or... I think the thing about the headphone jack, it's a little bit of nostalgia because it's been there forever. That's one of the few things as everything's going digital that hasn't changed, right? That's the same, almost regardless of how old you are, you remember a headphone jack when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And I think it's a little bit of that, but a little bit is because there's no DRM component and cannot be a DRM component, and it is analog. You could use it for anything. So I have, I kickstarted the Clicky, I think it was, which was just a little button that went into the headphone jack.
Yeah, no, I remember that, yes.
Stuff like that is cool, and now either will have to be USB-C or won't exist. The thing about USB-C is, a million things can plug into it, but only one at once.
Because
I'm not putting a
mind,
dongle on my phone, so I think you lose something there, too.
To my mind, the reason things like the Clicky, like Square, started going through the headphone jack was not because the headphone jack was the best way to do it. It's because on an iPhone, it's the only thing you had access to, because you couldn't plug some random thing into the Lightning port because Apple wouldn't license you to do it. They're like, no, not interested in that.
That makes sense.
So the Square people wanted to build an accessory for iPhones, and they had no other way of doing it. So the fact that you could plug it into the headphone jack and then their little device basically played tones like Chirp does, and their app just listened to the mic, just listened to the input. That was a hack. It wasn't meant to work like that. It's just because you couldn't get a license to plug arbitrary peripherals in.
And I guess the other thing with the headphone jack is you didn't need to build an iPhone version and an Android version and X. You built a headphone version and it worked with every
Do it all in software.
Forever.
Yeah, even my external battery, the phone charger, it's got to have Lightning and micro USB. And now, increasingly, I can't use it to charge anything because everything's USB-C, so I've got to buy another one. It's infuriating. So not having a headphone jack... See, to me, a lot of people are like, it's fine because I had Bluetooth headphones anyway, right? My headphones are just bundled up in my jacket pocket. I don't use them all that much. If I'm going out somewhere... and I'm walking across town or whatever, I might whip the headphones out, plug it in, listen to a podcast, something like that. But I don't use them that much. So I do not want things which need charging, because they will not be charged when I try to use them. And I never even had to think about that. It's like me giving you a knife and fork which needs charging up, and you suddenly find it really annoying because you never had to think about that before. Headphones, I just took the headphones out, plugged them into my phone, and I was good. I never had to think, do they need charging? Have I plugged them in overnight? What if the battery goes dead? Do I need to replace it? All this kind of thing. They're just a wire with a speaker on the end, right? It's hard to break them, right?
Yeah.
And if they do break, you can buy a new pair for 99p.
Right. I didn't even think about that. My Bluetooth pair my nicer Bluetooth set does have a wire as well. I never use it, but I suppose now I will be on a plane and the headphones will die and I'll be sitting there with that wire and not be able to use it. Just to mock me for this segment.
This is the thing. And there's something to be said for, you know, it's courageous to get rid of this feature because everyone's just going to go out and buy new stuff anyway. It annoys me that it's being pitched as this is the way of the future and anyone who's not on board is some kind of terrible Luddite who doesn't understand new wireless technology. And you're like, not really, right? I don't want a battery-powered knife and fork, and I don't want battery-powered headphones.
I think Apple did it one iteration of phone too early, and their ridiculous courage thing hurt the whole. It just was so absurd that I think it kind of hurt the cause.
Well, so, since we're speaking about people courageously dying on their ass with marketing, and you said Essential did exactly this, and the thing that Essential did was basically took a huge amount of interest and goodwill from people and threw it away.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
But by the time everyone got the phone, as you said, when you opened the box, you were already expecting it to be bad, not because you were that annoyed with the way they'd handled it all.
Right.
And therefore, as you say, people who would normally say, oh, well, that's not too bad, or they'd live with it, or it's fine, or whatever, are not giving it a pass. One of the things that has historically annoyed me about the Android community and the Linux community, actually, versus the Apple community, is that Apple people tend to go, okay, this thing that I've bought, it's got a couple of problems, but they basically have a positive outlook. It's like, what's good about this thing? I mean, the touch bar comes out and everyone thinks it's stupid, but people aren't stopping buying MacBooks. They just go, well, I'm not going to use the stupid touch bar, whatever. What they're not doing is throwing all their toys out of the pram on Reddit and going, I'm never buying anything from them again. I can't believe they hate the community so much.
Right.
Android people and Linux people as well tend to look for things wrong when a change happens rather than things right. And that's exacerbated in exactly this case by the fact that they took all that goodwill and threw it away. Now, a company who I'd compare them to on that is Mycroft. Because by the time everyone's Mycroft... They were the amazing hope for open source, home assistants, and all this kind of thing. But by the time the Mycroft arrived, everyone's like, oh, God, we've been waiting 18 months now.
Right.
So you're not inclined to give it a pass and say, well, it's open source, so it's going to get good, and look on the positive side.
Sure.
Everyone looked on the negative side, so it's kind of... And basically because they threw away all that goodwill, and Essential have done exactly the same thing.
They have. And I mean, to make it worse for Essential, this did not happen to me, but they evidently emailed around 70 to 90 people.
Ah, yes.
About saying your account, for whatever reason, has been flagged for fraud. We just need a photo ID so we can process your account. And instead of doing what everyone else does and sending that directly to the person, they CC'd everyone. So people responded to everyone with photos of their passport and license. And so, from what I understand, Andy Rubin has bought each person who was affected by that, LifeLock subscription, and has bought their phone. So, I mean, I guess they handled it well from that perspective, but that's, on top of shipping late, to have that happen is just...
Yeah. They recovered okay. I mean, it's interesting to contrast this. You remember we had the discussion about GitLab having the issue?
Yeah.
And we praised them to the high heavens for dealing with it in a brilliant way. They basically managed to turn what could have been a disaster into everyone going, wow, you did a really great job. Nice one, people.
Yeah, yeah.
Well played. And superb way of turning, you know, snatching victory from the jaws of defeat.
Yeah.
It's exactly what they meant. If it was handled wrong, it could have cratered the company. They did a really good job. Essentially have done like the opposite.
Yes. So I'm curious to see how they'll recover. And the other big thing here, and maybe two of them, is A, do they follow through on their promise to have quick updates? So I want to see how quickly... So the September update should come out today for Nexuses. It's usually... I don't know if Labor Day will throw it off by one day, but... So I'm going to see... I'm interested to see how quick the September update comes out. And then I'm interested to see how quickly this gets Oreo. Because when you make that one of your things and one of your differentiators, as a small company, it's going to be potentially difficult for them to do it. But I think very, very important for them to do it. And I mean, the thing about Oreo is Google clearly knows this is a problem. So Treble should make this easier, not only for Essential, but for everyone. But
yes.
I still think they need to follow through on that. And Treble's interesting in that I didn't realize this, one of the ways they're enforcing that is, for the first time ever, you have to ship a certain kernel version with your phone to be certified.
Really?
It's just a minimum version number, so it must enable something that Treble uses.
Yeah, presumably.
Yeah, but so I thought that was an interesting addition. But B, I think they're going to have to make one killer modular device. So I don't think it's going to be the 360 camera. But I think in the next, let's say, 12 to 18 months, they're going to need one device to really, really be compelling. I don't know what that device will or could even be.
I kind of feel the same. I mean, when I liked the sound of the Essential because of their strong focus on industrial design and commitment to giving you updates and giving them quickly and so on and so forth. The modular thing, it feels kind of like a solution in search of a problem to me, because I can't think of anything I'd want to clip onto my phone to make it better.
So one thing that might be cool is,
maybe I'm just stupid,
a battery pack exactly the size of the phone that's very thin that you could buy a couple, and they would just, you maybe don't want it the same color as your phone. It could be different. But the thing is, it would then have, no, even that, it would have to be such a goofy shape because they couldn't cover the camera.
No. And more importantly, it's got to cling on to the thing somehow. I mean,
it uses magnets.
Really?
The two pins use magnets, yeah. That's how the camera stays on.
I thought the camera went kind of over the top of the phone.
But it sticks on that through...
I may have misunderstood that. I'm not convinced. I mean, you know, maybe you could do that, but my assumption was that if you got a battery pack the size of the phone but really thin, that you'd never hold it on just by two little magnetic points,
so
right?
You can actually stick
also,
this on
it's
the
a magnet
stick
next to a computer. That's like, you know, rule number one of things not to do, isn't it?
Well, spinning discs. A spinning disc in this.
True, I suppose. Yeah, okay.
I mean, maybe that's why the... Oh, no, that wouldn't make sense. Yeah, I don't know. But so I'm struggling to think of what that thing will be.
Yeah.
But I think it will define the company in a lot of ways.
If they come up with something, they've got a massive opportunity for it to be killer appy. If it's a thing that everyone goes, oh my God, I want that.
Yes.
But I don't know what that thing is. I mean, they'll have stolen such a march on everybody else. If the idea of clipping stuff on your smartphone becomes a thing, they'll have at least a year in advance of everybody else.
Sure.
But I can't for the life of me.
They should go
think what's.
They should go find the people that did Handspring and see what they had in mind.
Haven't they got? Did all the Handspring people go to Google, or did they go to Palmos or Webos?
Palm Bottom. So yeah. I guess they went to HP and have never been heard
and
from
then
since. Yeah.
Again, died away. Goodbye, wave goodbye to these things. It will be interesting to see whether this thing actually takes off. They, unlike most of the competitors, assuming we define this as a competitor to Android in some way rather than just one more Android phone, they managed to define themselves a marketplace and get people excited about it in a way that a whole bunch of other third parties haven't. Sailfish never managed this Yola never managed this with right. The Sailfish phones and so on. No one, sure. People weren't excited about it. People weren't anticipating them showing, well, people in our community were, but you know, normal people were not. And Essential kind of managed that, and so yeah, my hopes aren't high, I have to say, which is disappointing.
So I'm curious to hear what the community thinks. So if you're listening to this, head to community.bedvoltage.org. But let us know A, what you think of the phone and the concept of the phone. But B, I'm curious if anyone can come up with something that's modular that you would snap to the top of your phone and you think would be genuinely useful.
Yeah. That would be, yes, come up with something. Seriously, we want to hear suggestions.
That
what
is
would
your
you
task,
snap on top
Bed
of your
Voltage
phone?
Community.
We need what we need is a little tiny thing that squeezes a juice bag, in my opinion.
And Juicero pivots.
Yeah, there it is. Clip on Juicero. That's exactly it. Where you just feed thin slices of lime into the top of it or something. That'd be fabulous.
I kind of want it to exist now.
Yes, so tell us what you think about the Essential phone and whether you're planning on buying it, because...
Or buying into the ecosystem in general, because they want to come out with a home device that is basically all of the Echo and Home built into one, because they don't think the ecosystem should be fragmented. So, I mean, I'm curious what people think of the concept of essential in general.
Yeah. I
suspect it will be a verbalized version of the noise you just made, but I am curious though.
Yeah. I should point out that not fragmenting the ecosystem by inventing a whole different ecosystem and then making everyone come to that instead is not how you solve the problem.
One of my favorite XKCD, actually.
Oh, the 14 competing standards one. Yeah, yes. Exactly. There would be a direct link to that. Right, so we have been Bad Voltage. Thank you very much.
Do we have anything else before we...
I don't think so.
Are you going to or speaking at any conferences before the next show?
Not before the next show, no. I'm at Hackfriends, but that's not for a little while yet. So... are you speaking? Oh, you are, I think, actually.
Yeah, I will be in Los Angeles at the Open Source Summit with our comrade Jonathan Bacon. I think my talk is on the 12th. So it's cool. About building communities. So if you will be in the LA area, you should check it out.
Yeah, you should, absolutely. Go and see Jeremy. I believe John is speaking as well.
I believe he is speaking on the 11th and the 13th.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Yes. So, have a good 2 weeks, people. And we'll be back for the 100th show.